having a bit of time together there. Hey, we are continuing on in our journey through the life of David. We're talking about David. He's this man after God's own heart, but yet he's an interesting character, and there's a lot about him that is celebrated, but his life didn't always go smoothly, and we're going to kind of explore that a little bit today. You should have on your seat a piece of paper, and we are going to turn on the lights here in just a second. That was just to kind of like bring everybody back here. But we're going to turn on lights in just a second so that you can have a chance to read that. So I'm so interested in the life of David because a few years ago I went and I've studied three different times in Israel, and I have counted them as just really some of the most profound parts of my journey of faith. Because when you are in a place and you smell it, you see it, you taste it, you feel the heat, all these things help you suddenly turn to Scripture, and it changes the way that you see a little bit. There's a chance, there's a rumor floating around that I'm probably going to take another group in 2020. And so we're in the middle of just trying to put some of that stuff together and think of it as a possibility for us. If that's something you would like to chat about, please come and talk to me as we kind of put together and get a sense of folks that might like to come with me if I go to Israel again then. But this morning, we are going to be talking about David being on the run. This is an important interlude in the life of David, and it takes up a big chunk of his story. That David, he is on the run, and things are bad. There's about 15 key stories of David when he is in the desert, when he's in the wilderness. And each of these stories, connected with some Psalms, which we're going to read together this morning, they kind of piece together the story, and it's hard. But it's the part of the story that I actually like the most because it makes me go, good stuff happens in the wilderness. Did you notice how Rebecca here just a moment ago said, oh no, she was stuck for 10 days alone? But she wasn't lonely, but she learned that in the wilderness, right? But she was there in this place and everybody was gone and she had a moment of panic. Has anybody ever had a panic moment when you were suddenly without your tether and then suddenly you learned something in this place? This is the interesting thing, is we learn something when we are in this place. So I'm just going to prep us up. So Pastor Evan last week talked about how David and Jonathan became friends. Jonathan was King Saul's son and was in line to become heir for the throne. But David, God chose him to be king. And David could have come on in sword swinging to say, I am chosen by God to be king. But Saul was still king. And so there's this weird tension going on there. So David, he is on the run from Saul, and this is something that happens. He goes to this place just outside of Jerusalem, a place called Nob, and there's these priests there, and he's running with his men. He's fleeing, and he's starving. He needs food. And he goes to this little kind of temple place where these priests are, and he says, I need some bread. And they said, well, we don't have any bread except for bread that's on the altar for God. And but the priests go, good, we can use it. So he feeds David, and David continues on his journey. And so they run, they go from cave to cave, hiding from town to town, wilderness to wilderness. He even goes to this Philistine king. He even goes to the enemy, and he pretends to be a crazy man. He lets spit all go down his beard, and he acts crazy-like. And the king of Gath says, we already have enough madmen around here that we need this guy. And so David carries on. He's desperate. His own king doesn't want him, wants to kill him. Even the enemy king says, we don't want you either. And so he's just moving around from place to place. Soon he gathers to himself a band of misfits. Like we're talking misfits. It says people who are in debt, people who are running from the law, those who are in trouble. These were not a cast of characters that you would choose to have with you. But eventually he had 400 people gathered around him, and he kind of gathered them up, and he probably looked around and says, what am I into here? I'm running from place to place. Kings are out to get me. They're on the hunt. There was a day when I was told that I would be king, and God chose me, but this is not feeling like it today. It's not feeling like it at all. Meanwhile, on the other side, Saul, he's chasing him, and he's going to all the places that David was, chasing him down, trying to find him, to kill him. And as he's going along, he even goes and finds out that the priests of Nob had fed David and his men some food. So he goes there, finds this out, and he kills 80 It says 85 of God's priests, and then he goes after their families and their livestock and even their babies. So on one hand, we have David, he's on the run, and then mad King Saul is chasing him. And he's wicked. You can view him as a devouring lion. He's consuming everything in his path because he is so consumed with rage. He's so consumed that somebody out there might be king instead of him, and he's trying to preserve himself. Anyone watch Game of Thrones or some of that stuff? Like, it's kind of borderline on just this kind of this terrible story that's unfolding. Incidentally, Nob, just outside of Jerusalem, and it's the place, it's on the same hill where Jesus prayed with his disciples in a garden. And you can imagine that Jesus is sitting there with his disciples and he's praying, and everybody would have known that it was right on that spot that there was one king came and ate some food, and the other king came and he killed and devoured, essentially, all of the priests. These are stories, and there's layers and layers to it. But anyway, David goes and he's in the wilderness. So what's happening here? Isn't he supposed to be king? Why is he running in the wilderness? Why is God taking his chosen person and having them in the wilderness? Doesn't God love him? Doesn't he want good things for him? Well, the author of 1 Samuel, he's painting this grim picture of David's existence. This is not comfort or safety or security in the way that we would know it. And we might run from it. But David, instead of running from it, he stepped into it. And we're going to watch and see what David did. David did something that I think we can walk away with here this morning. David had a particular posture that is unique. He's threading the needle a bit with it here, but we'll watch and see. He goes into the wilderness and he discovers that God is meeting him. In the wilderness, I have had a chance to go there. Every time I go there, I make a point to go into the wilderness. And it is really rough. The wilderness there is like, picture like gravel as far as the eye can see, and rocks like this every foot. In other words, it's hard to walk through. It's rustic. It's hot. It's been baked for thousands of years. It is not a pleasant place to walk through. But something happens when you spend a few hours in the wilderness. You realize this is a dangerous place. There are dangerous things that can kill you in the wilderness. I read a list and it had 100 things that could kill you out there. There's a lot of things that are after you. So on one hand, it's dangerous, but on the other hand, everything becomes crystal clear. I walked from Jerusalem to Jericho on this long stretch, and it was hot, it was wonderful, and something happens when you walk in the wilderness is you just start to like shed some of the things you're thinking about a moment ago, and you're starting to think about what's right in front of you. It's barren. It's stark. It puts you in a place of unease at first, and then it puts you in a place where parts of you become a little bit more crystal clear. There's a reason why Jesus went away to the wilderness. There's a reason why even during the season of Lent, we celebrate this as a wilderness time. Because sometimes we need to spread out and let the distractions disappear a little bit and take a look at what's most essential, most clear, what makes us up. And so we can't often cast off the wilderness. We got to step into it. So David goes to this place called En Gedi. And En Gedi is, it says on the back of your little sheet there's some pictures of it. It's an oasis beside the Dead Sea. It's literally called the place of the spring goats. And you can see there's the Dead Sea, and this is salt water. This is more than salt water. It's like thick paste water. It is so full of minerals. And if you go in there, you will burn any little cut and nick that you have open, and it's fantastic. It is remarkable. One of the stories that I often share when I'm teaching this class is one of my friends, John Rempel, who I love. Every good story starts with my good friend John Rempel. He has so many good stories. But John, he came to faith when I was in high school, and he came with me to Bible school, and he's now translating the Bible around the world. But when he first went in there, someone said, "Don't fart in the Dead Sea." And Jonathan said, "It can't be that bad." And I was like, "Johnny, you're taking your life into your own hands." suddenly I kind of forget about this, and I hear a whoop and a holler over, because he farted in the Dead Sea, and it went in, and it burned him, and he was just like, don't fart in the Dead Sea. He was just telling everybody this. He said, this is the worst thing. Anyway, so this is the Dead Sea, and you come out of the Dead Sea, and even if you dry off and put on your clothes, your body is just now caked in minerals and salt. And so you come up and the sun is baking you and you're just crusty. And I was just walking and you feel it everywhere. And your clothes, if you're wearing dark clothes, lines of salt all over it. It's just awful. And so you work your way up. And in this, you can see En Gedi is this oasis. It's one of a few. And up in this valley, there's some living streams of water that flow down. And there's palm trees and there's these goats, there's these rock hyrax in there, these wild goats, and they live in there, and they've lived in there for thousands of years, and you walk up, and next thing you discover, there's these waterfalls, and you go from crusty and hot to the shady place where you're being washed over, and you just wash underneath the waterfalls, and there's something quite magical about it. It's very beautiful. And then above it is the Judean wilderness. You can see the plateau there. It's hot and it's baked and everything around there is just stark. You'd die in a day or two if you didn't have water there. But in it is this little place, this wonderful oasis. And we're going to talk a little bit about that today. David, as he's going along, he finds himself in this wilderness, and David did not start in the wilderness, nor did his life end in the wilderness, but he had this middle point, this major shaping chapter of his life. And we're going to take a look at 1 Samuel 24 and read just the first couple of verses of it here. 1 Samuel 24, this is another one of my favorite chapters. There's a lot of really, really good ones, but this one's just really quirky and fun. After Saul returned from fighting the Philistines, he was told that David had gone into the wilderness of En Gedi. So Saul chose 3,000 elite troops from all of Israel and went to search for David and his men near the rocks of the wild goats. So this place of En Gedi, they find that he's hidden there, and David had spent time there. I'm going to show you a little bit more about what En Gedi is about because I want you to really get the flavor of it. And as we play, we can start playing this video. It's this video that shows us images of En Gedi, of this little oasis in the desert that probably hasn't changed since the time of David. But there's a handful of psalms that David wrote while he was here, psalms that David wrote while he was on the run in the wilderness, and you can listen for some words in there where he finds comfort. Let me read these to you. Be good to me, God, and now. I've run to you for dear life. I'm hiding out under your wings until the hurricane blows over. I call out to High God, the God who holds me together. He sends orders from heaven and saves me. He humiliates those who kick me around. God delivers generous love. He makes good on his word. I find myself in a pride of lions who are wild for a taste of human flesh. Their teeth are lances and arrows. Their tongues are sharp daggers. Soar high in the skies, O God. Cover the whole earth with your glory. They trapped my path. I thought I was dead and done for. They dug a man trap to catch me and fell in headlong themselves. I'm ready, God, so ready. Ready from head to toe. Ready to sing. Ready to raise a tune. Wake up, O soul. Wake up, harp. Wake up, lute. Wake up, you sleepyhead son. I'm thanking you, God, out loud in these streets, singing your praises in town and country. The deeper your love, the higher it goes. Every cloud is a flag to your faithfulness. Soar high in the skies, O God. Cover the whole earth with your glory. It's a psalm when he was being chased by King Saul. Here's a psalm from when he was in the Judean wilderness, which is this area. God, you're my God. I can't get enough of you. I've worked up such hunger and thirst for God, traveling across dry and weary deserts. So here I am in this place of worship, eyes open, drinking in your strength and your glory. In your generous love, I'm really living at last. My lips brim praises like fountains. I bless you every time I take a breath. My arms wave like banners of praise to you. I eat my fill of prime rib and gravy. I smack my lips. It's time to shout praises. If I'm sleepless at midnight, I spend the hours in grateful reflection. Because you've always stood up for me, I'm free to run and play. I hold on to you for dear life, and you hold me steady as a post. Those who are out to get me are marked for doom, marked for death, bound for hell. They'll die violent deaths. Jackals will tear them limb from limb, but the king is glad in God. His true friends spread the joy, while small-minded gossips are gagged for good. Psalm 23 is another one that you may have grown up with. I'm going to read it in a different version. But it's one you can imagine him. Well, just listen to the words and imagine being in this little oasis after being chased in the wilderness by Saul. Imagine coming up with these words. God, my shepherd, I don't need a thing. You've bedded me down in lush meadows. You find me quiet pools to drink from. True to your word, you let me catch my breath and send me in the right direction. Even when the way goes through Death Valley, I'm not afraid when you walk by my side. Your trusty shepherd's crook makes me feel secure. You serve me a 6-course dinner right in front of my enemies. You revive my drooping head. My cup brims with blessing. Your beauty and love chase after me every day of my life. I'm back home in the house of God for the rest of my life. And so it's in this place that a new story unfolds, a story that we discover what has changed inside of David when he was in this place. Take a look back at the scripture and let's see what happens here. Verse 3. At the place where the road passes some sheepfolds, Saul went into a cave to relieve himself. This is where it gets quirky. But as it happened, David and his men were hiding further back in that very cave. Now's your opportunity, David's men whispered. Today the Lord is telling you, I will certainly put your enemy into your power to do with as you wish. So you can imagine, just by chance, all of David's men, they were back buried in this cave. And there's a whole bunch of caves up in these cliffs in this En-Gedi area. And you can imagine the moment that they would be like, oh, there's somebody at the door. Hide. It's Saul. Going to the bathroom right there. Just imagine them whispering at each other, like, get him. This is great. There's a really epic and kind of vulgar picture on the back that I put. The people in the Middle Ages, they for some reason loved this story. I don't know. So they made a lot of paintings with the king with his pants down. Maybe they all had rotten kings and they were really hoping that a David would come along, right? But here he is. Now, this is the man who's been shaped by this kind of life of praise. He's shaped to trust God. He's realized that the wilderness has done something inside of him that he didn't know could be done. Something has shaped inside of him. And so David crept forward, and instead of killing him, it says, so David crept forward and cut off a piece of the hem of Saul's robe. But then David's conscience began bothering him because he had cut Saul's robe. He said to his man, the Lord forbid that I should do this to my lord the king. I shouldn't attack the Lord's anointed one, for the Lord himself has chosen him. You can imagine his buddies are just pulling their hair out. They're like, this is our ticket out of here. You could run him through with a sword right now and you'd be king and everybody in this valley that came to kill you would suddenly be following you because you are the rightful king. The story could change right here, right now. The temptation was right in front of him. But this is something that happens. when you're in the wilderness. You see, when you're in the wilderness, things that were useless to you become useful and beautiful, right? When you're in the wilderness, the world around you becomes holy again. When the world is something that you use, it loses its holiness and its beauty. When I see people in front of me to use them, then they aren't beautiful to me anymore. They aren't the way that God intends. But in the wilderness, David's eyes have changed, and he sees what is beautiful. He sees Saul not for the crook that he is, the wicked man he is, but he sees them as God's beautiful person. What kind of eyes does a man like David have to see somebody so awful in such a beautiful way to say, this isn't me to do. It's not for me to kill him, but he's God's anointed. He's beautiful to me. He's our king. You see, Saul is going around and he's a consumer. He's taking things on and he's garbling them up. People, whatever is in his way so he can keep his status. But you see, David, he is not a consumer. Even when we might talk about him being on the toilet, going to the bathroom, and his buddies, like pirates, are like, this guy's disgusting, let's do him in while his pants are down. Even David sees the sacredness in it, and he doesn't follow that line. He says, no, he's God's anointed. What eyes see this? Who do you see as sacred? Who's the person today that comes to mind that you're like, if we carried swords back in the day, I'd have run this guy through a long time ago. Do you have a neighbor? A family member? Somebody that if they were just out of your hair, you'd be okay? Who do you see as sacred? Do you have wilderness eyes to see people the way that David did? Have your eyes been shaped apart from all the harried mess of this life so that you can see people the way that God does? David went away and had to have a wilderness experience before he could see people in this way. Jesus went away before he could see people in a way that the world around him did not understand. We are called to be people who have wilderness eyes to see. So this is what happened. So David restrained his men and did not let them kill Saul. After Saul left the cave and gone on his way, David came out and shouted after him, "My Lord the King!" And when Saul looked around, David bowed down low before him. Then he shouted to Saul, "Why do you listen to people who say I'm trying to harm you? This very day, you can see with your own eyes it isn't true. For the Lord placed you at my mercy back there in the cave. Some of my men told me to kill you, but I spared you. For I said, I will never harm the king. He's the Lord's anointed one. Look, my father, at what I have in my hand. It's a piece of the hem of your robe. I cut it off, but I didn't kill you. This proves that I'm not trying to harm you, that I've not sinned against you, even though you've been hunting for me to kill me. May the Lord judge between us. Perhaps the Lord will punish you for what you're trying to do to me, but I will never harm you. As an old proverb says, from evil people come evil deeds, so you can be sure I will never harm you." Did you know everything in your life is in God's hands? And you might want to take that sometimes, and you might want to push the story forward a little bit. But the more that you spend time in the wilderness with God being shaped into his likeness, the more you see that he is actually the one in charge. He is the one who sustains you in the wilderness, and then he's the one that's going to sustain you when all the action strikes too. He's in the thick of the action. He can make a decisive choice, and he might even be able to say, this is God's will, and I'm his tool. But he doesn't. He says, I am trusting that God is going to bring an end to this story. So verse 14. Who is the king of Israel trying to catch anyway? Should he spend his time chasing one who is worthless as a dead dog and a single flea? May the Lord therefore judge which of us is right and punish the guilty one. He is my advocate, and he will rescue me from your power. When David had finished speaking, Saul called back, "Is that really you, my son David?" And he began to cry. And he said to David, "You are a better man than I am, for you repaid me good for evil. Yes, you've been amazingly kind to me today. For when the Lord put me in a place where you could have killed me. You didn't do it. Who else would let his enemy get away when he had him in his power? May the Lord reward you well for your kindness you've shown me today. And now I realize that you're surely going to be king and that the kingdom of Israel will flourish under your rule. Now swear to me by the Lord that when this happens, you will not kill my family and destroy my line of descendants. So David promised this to Saul with an oath. Then Saul went home, but David and his men went back to their stronghold. See, I think David is learning that his cave had been a stronghold and a refuge for him. Caves and high places had been places where he had gone to find rescue and strength. But he's learning that his stronghold is God. That his stronghold isn't a place, but it's a person. And this person loves him very, very much. You see, Saul thought he could consume his way to life. Kill, chase, destroy. But David found another way. In the wilderness, he was not consuming, but he was now being consumed by God's love. You see, in the wilderness, he wasn't consuming, but he was being consumed by God's love. And he was changed. There's a quote. I'm going to put it up here. It says, "We plainly cannot consume our way to discipleship. We plainly cannot consume our way to discipleship. We consume out of greed and self-service, but God, he consumes us with his love." We got these two individuals. One is a consumer and enters into his life fully bent on taking what he can, thinking that will give him life and nourish him and make him a whole person and a king. But David, he's in a place where he has very little to consume, and so he decides to turn to God. And God begins to envelop him and embrace him. You see, we have these four values at Lake Ridge, and sometimes even I forget what these values are about. You see, so I sometimes believe, when I'm not thinking straight, that these are four products that we offer. If you come to Lake Ridge, you will experience generous people. You will experience wonderful worship. Oh, but buy now, and we'll throw in amazing story and community, right? Welcome to church as something to consume. Welcome to a product. And if you don't like it, golly, there's another place for you to go where you can consume something that is more fitting to you, right? This is how I grew up. I grew up that if there was one church that didn't quite fit what I was looking for, we could go to another one. And we could get something better there. And when that place started to get a little old, stale, you could pick up and move to the next one, right? And you could consume your way to Jesus. But here's the interesting thing. My friend Alan Hirsch, he says, he's discovered you cannot consume your way to discipleship. Consuming things, just sucking them in like a vacuum, does not actually make you into the likeness of Jesus. And so these values are not something we actually consume. They're something that actually come and we allow, it's a space for God to consume us with his love. So community, we don't come here and go, those people didn't quite fit my vision of community. There wasn't enough laughter over here. I wasn't invited to this thing over here. That person's weird, right? No, no, no. We come into community and we realize it's in community that God loves us and embraces us. We are consumed by God here. We discover something about his love in the rough places, in the rub of community. In story, it isn't us coming to try to like bolster our story, but it's us coming under God's story and realizing that God's story, like a wave, splashes over us. And we find that we have solid footing because we are in his story. And he's doing something profound in us, with us, and through us. Worship. We don't come to sing songs that make us feel good. We come because we are being shaped to respond to God. We want to be consumed with a heart of worship so that our whole lives would respond to God in worship. Do you know what? I don't care about worship styles. I have worshiped with monks going, wah, wah, wah. I've worshipped with some Pentecostals who can run on the ceilings. I've worshipped with some Catholics. I've worshipped with Anglicans. I've even worshiped with the Presbyterians. Those guys are dry. I've worshiped on all sorts of different ways because I've discovered it isn't me consuming worship to make my life better. It is me coming and saying, God, consume me in worship. Fill me. Come and totally enrapture me in your love so that I can see you and know you. I've worshiped in so many different ways. And generosity. We come to experience the heart of a generous God, and we want his heart to be imparted in our heart. We want to reflect God's heart in the world. We want to be consumed by God, not the other way around. So David shows us that it's in this wilderness with God that God consumes us. He shapes us into his likeness where we learn to love and be loved. This is why church, I'm sometimes not interested in making it too comfortable for you. Everything about me really wants to make it comfortable because I love you. And I want it to be comfortable. I want this place to be a place where you feel safe. But you know what? The kind of safety that David found was a very different kind of comfort, wasn't it? It was rocky and he lived in a cave. But gosh darn it, did you hear those psalms? He was safe in God. He discovered something about the character and nature of God that could only happen in this rough place, and his band of 400 misfits and him discovered something amazing about who God was, and his comfort level entirely changed. I do not want us to consume our way to God. I want us to be consumed by God. I don't want us to take in products that we hope will give us peace, running over others to make sure that we come out on top. I want to have wilderness eyes. I want us to learn how to find footing in rocky places. I want us to gather around moments of oasis and say, God met us. We thought we were going to dry out and shrivel up, but God met us here. And it's good. And he will be our comfort. Lake Ridge is not a place that provides goods and services to consume. And if we go down that road very far, we won't grow as followers of Jesus. We are a company of pilgrims. That's who we are. We're a band of travelers. We're on the move. Will we one day have a building? Maybe. Eventually, David lived in a building. He had a palace. They eventually built a temple. That's where the story actually went downhill. The best parts of the stories are sometimes the ones where you're out camping, right? David and his men, they were camping. We travel together into the places where God's lead us, into our neighborhoods, into worship, into hard places, and through challenges that we share together. Because we believe that when we stay nimble and when we stay humble, we will discover God. And we will discover what he thinks about us. And we will discover that he is waiting with an oasis for us because he is our source of life. He is our peace. He is where we find community, life, joy. It's in him that church thrives. And it is good. Eugene Peterson, he says this. He says, we start out being desperate in the wilderness of En Gedi. And before we know it, we're ecstatic in the wilderness of God. Friends, I'd love for us to be an En Gedi people who might not know where we're standing for a second and go, we're in the wilderness. This is scary. Wouldn't it be great if other people came around and said, it's okay? Eventually, the wilderness of En Gedi becomes a place of perfect peace. We learn how to live here together. I love Rebecca's story because I could overhear the phone calls that she had with Evan because our offices have paper-thin walls. And in those phone calls, Evan was saying these things. It's scary. You're in the wilderness. You're alone. But you're going to be shaped. And you're going to discover that this is a place where God meets you. Friends, we want to welcome you to the wilderness. Lake Ridge is a band of travelers. Happily, we aren't being chased down by an awful king. But we find our home at every twist and turn in God. So will we be travelers together? Will we journey together? Will we step into the oasis together. If you're here today and you're in a wilderness moment, remember, your life didn't start in a wilderness, and your life might not end in a wilderness, but you're in this middle spot because God maybe wants to give you wilderness eyes to see just how much he loves you, okay? We cannot consume our way to discipleship, but may you be consumed with God who is near with you today. Amen? Amen. Please stand with me. Friends, I don't know what you're facing this week, but you can imagine David and his men as they were traveling through this wilderness, and when they finally came to En Gedi, they thought it was just another big cliff sheer drop-off. And then they look down and they see palm trees and life and these weird gopher things and some goats. And they're going, guys, there's a break in the action. We can stay here. This will be good. So may the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and grant you his peace, because he is the source of your peace today. Amen.